A matter of luck. A program dedicated to the greatest inventor and scientific discoverer the world has known, Lady Luck. And bringing you in one complete 30-minute presentation, two authentic and true stories of remarkable scientific achievement. Tonight we tell you of James Watt and Samuel Morse, and how each became famous through a matter of luck. James Watt and a matter of luck. The small town of Greenock in Scotland is not particularly noted. It has no great cathedral, no famous seats of learning, no historic castle wrapped about with legend and tradition, no sprawling factories to swell its population. But to be remembered, it needs none of these. For it is the birthplace of a man who, above all others, changed the face of the world, who contributed more than any other to the Industrial Revolution that turned England into a true empire. That man was James Watt, who took labor out of the hands of men and beasts and put it into the hands of machines. We first meet James Watt in the year 1756 in London, whither he had gone a year before as a young man of 19, to set up shop as a scientific instrument maker.
They give you good day, Master Watt. Plaguey thick fog we have today.
Oh, good day, sir. You're plaguey it is indeed, and ruining my health day by day.
Ah, yes, one must be born and bred to London to thrive in it. It's a nasty cough you have.
Some days it gripes my very entrails like the devil himself. Oh, what is it, sir? You have work for me?
Work I have for you, from Dr. Solomon of Queen Anne's Walk. It is a delicate balance which requires...
Pray do not describe it, sir. I am doing no more work in London.
The deuce you are not. Oh, that's bad news for those who want instruments repaired. You're leaving London town?
As soon as I finish what I've already contracted to do and can set my affairs in order. The moment that is done, I shall step aboard the first northbound coach and not tarry till I breathe the clear air of Scotland.
Well, I wish you Godspeed on your journey and better health when you arrive. And my soul, it's a plaguey bad cough, plaguey bad. You should see Solomon. He's a good leech for coughs and agues.
And so, after his brief sojourn in London, James Watt returned to his native heath. But instead of living at home at Greenock, as his parents expected, he opened a shop in Glasgow. And although his health was not robust, it improved the moment he was away from the murks and mists of the Thames estuary. It was in Glasgow that Lady Luck, heavily disguised as the blackest ill fortune, first took a hand in his affairs. Watt was extremely good at his trade and had quickly acquired a connection with professors and students from the university. But this was no good to the powerful Scottish guilds, for one day a caller arrived at his shop.
Ah, you will be Master James Watt, I presume.
That is so, sir. What is your pleasure?
I'm very much afraid, Master Watt, that I'm the bearer of ill tidings. Yes, ill tidings that you're not going to enjoy.
Oh? And who may you be?
Master Watt, I represent the Guild and Association of Guilds to which your calling of instrument maker belongs. And it's my duty to tell you that you must shut your shop forthwith.
Shut my shop, indeed? And why, may I ask? What have I done to offend you?
It's not what you've done, Master Watt. It's what you've omitted to do.
Then, sir, will you be kind enough to explain? I attend the kirk and I offer offense to no man. Why must I close my shop?
Because of the terms of our charter. Now, it's laid down...
Your pardon. Will you be kind enough to wait, sir? I'll attend to you in a moment. As you were saying...
It is laid down in our charter and incorporated in law that no man may practice any of our trades without first serving his apprenticeship. Now, Master Watt, have you served such an apprenticeship?
Well, no. But I know more of my trade than any man in Glasgow. Instead of me serving an apprenticeship to many instrument makers, they should serve one with me. The idea is ridiculous.
Yeah, that may be so, and then it may not. But a statute is a statute, Master Watt. And until you've served 7 years article to an approved instrument maker, you will shut your doors and keep them shut or suffer the penalty at law. Do you understand?
Aye, I understand. But there's nary a scrap of sense in it that I can see. No, nor justice either.
You're not required to see sense, Master Watt. You're merely required to shut your doors. See that you do so. Good day.
And now, sir, my apologies for keeping you waiting. The more so since it appears that I can do nothing for you.
Permit me to introduce myself, Master Watt. My name is Black, Joseph Black, lecturer in chemistry at the university, at your service.
Your servant, sir. I suppose you overheard what our friend from the guilds had to say.
Upon my soul, I could not help it. If I may say so, you've been taking a little too much of your competitor's business. You're too good for them.
And a wee scrap of good it's done me.
Aye. All this talk of laws and statutes is fiddle-faddle. These fellows from the guilds never grind their axes so sharp as when they've something to gain from it. Well, I suppose I shall have to take my business somewhere else, little as I've a taste for it.
I fear so, sir.
But, wait. I've an idea. Most of your work comes from the university, does it not?
Aye. 4 jobs out of 5, at least.
I thought so. It was Sinclair who recommended you to me. Now, listen. Why do you not set up your shop in the university grounds?
And how will that be to my advantage?
Don't you see, man? The guilds have no authority over the university.
None at all. I can trade there?
With impunity. The guilds may not even enter our grounds without the Chancellor's authority. And to thank, we have good King James VI. God bless him.
Then I shall do so. And never forget my good fortune that you happened in here at just such a time.
It is my pleasure, Master Watt. I see a tavern across your street. Shall we drink perdition to the guilds and health to King James?
By a stroke of incredibly good luck, James Watt was able to continue his profession, not in ordinary surroundings, but in the special atmosphere of the university. Between him and his newfound friend, Professor Black, there soon developed a close bond, all of which was beneficial to Watt. For contrary to the widely held belief, at this time he knew nothing of steam and cared less for steam engines. By 1760, there was already a steam engine in existence, that of Newcomen. But this was a crude affair whose use was restricted to pumping water out of mines. And Watt's interest in steam began when Joseph Black walked into his workshop carrying a strange-looking apparatus.
Jimmy! Jimmy, where are you?
Coming, Joseph.
Here's a thing that'll tickle your fancy, Jimmy. I'll wager you cannot tell what it is.
That I cannot. A wee weird, dear, if ever I saw one. What is it?
It's a model of Newcomen's steam engine, and it has something amiss. I want you to put it right.
If I am to mend it first, you must show me how it works. Of all the queer contraptions.
Now look closely. This, shaped like a kettle, is the boiler, and beneath it you build a fire. The water boils, steam flows through this pipe to the cylinder, this, and now watch. In the cylinder moves a piston, and steam entering pushes it up like this. When it's raised, cold water squirts in. The steam's condensed. There's a vacuum in the cylinder, and air pressure forces the piston down again.
And all worked by steam.
Yes. Jamie, I must hurry. I'll leave this with you for as long as you take to mend it. And if you canna, I don't know who can.
The engine interested James Watt more than anything he'd ever seen. And not content to work on it by day only, he took it home to explore its mysteries and study the properties of steam. By this time, he was newly married to a distant cousin, one Margaret Miller. And history records that she found the Newcomen engine tiresome, to say the least.
Maggie, my bonny wee lass, hurry up with supper, for I've me engine to get back to as quick as can be.
I declare, James Watt, if that horrid belching thing was a little shapelier, you'd chase me away and marry it instead.
There's no way to talk of a thing that could change the way of the world, Maggie.
All that engine could change, James Watt, is the colour of my curtains. It's back in Killiecrankie I should be this minute. Smoke and steam from daylight to dusk.
Oh, lassie, bear with it a little longer. I've finished mending it, but I cannot bring myself to return it to Joseph Black. Not until I know why it behaves as it does.
It behaves the way Master Newcomen meant it to, doesn't it?
Listen, and I'll try and explain it to you. Now, the boiler makes a certain amount of steam, and all the steam goes into the cylinder. But how much work does it do?
It makes a muckle of work for me, keeping the house clean after it.
The steam loses its power somehow, and that's what I mean to find out. Hey, Maggie, when I find out how to put the steam to work properly, I'll have an engine to do anything I like with. Anything.
What James Watt said was true. The Newcomen engine was so crude, with its cylinder full of steam one minute and cold water the next, that it could scarcely be called an engine at all. To make it work, its steam had to be condensed, and this meant that during every stroke, the cylinder was alternately heated, then chilled, heated, then chilled. Soon, winter came on, and with it the stroke of luck, the flash of inspiration that gave James Watt and the world the modern steam engine. We see him at home once more, still racking his brains over what seemed to be an insoluble problem.
There must be a way. There must be a way. Steam enters. The piston goes up.
Jamie! Let me in, Jamie. I haven't the key.
Oh, I'm coming, lassie. Oh, come in. Oh, lassie, you must be frozen to the bone. I should have gone to MacDougall's for you. It's a raw cold night tonight.
Oh, it is that, Jamie. Oh, let me warm myself before I get your supper.
Oh, and now the room's as cold as outside. It is a wretched house, this, Maggie, with the door to our front room opening to the street.
Aye, the man that built it shouldn't have built even byres for the cows. Here's our only fireplace in the room that opens onto the street.
Well, we'll move to a better one someday. Oh, tis cold. The room's as warm as toast, then you open the front door and it's as cold as charity itself. We should have the fire in another room.
Oh, the front door opening from another room.
Aye, it's like that poor wee engine of Newcomen's. Hot one minute, cold the next. Oh. Aye, lassie. Aye. There's me answer to the steam engine.
Are you taking a fit, Jamie?
Aye, a fit of understanding at last. All Newcomen's engine needs is a separate condenser. Chill the steam away from the cylinder. Then the cylinder will always be hot. It's the same thing as putting our fireside into another room. Black! I must see Joseph Black!
The door opening on a wintry night had shown what how to put steam to work, where before most of it had gone to warm up a chilled cylinder. From Watt's invention of the separate condenser sprang the whole gamut of steam engines as we know them today, in ships, in locomotives, in factories, and in powerhouses. Before long, they were turning the looms and hammering in the forges that laid the foundations of the wealth and power of Queen Victoria's England. Few inventions have had such far-reaching effects on our modern world, and few were so much the outcome of luck. James Watt wanted to be an instrument maker, but London fogs forced him back to Glasgow. The Scottish guilds forced him into the university, and luck threw in his path the man who enabled him to study and learn, and eventually brought him a Newcomen engine to mend. So Watt's improvement of the steam engine was not a matter of intent. It was just a matter of luck. just 1 minute, we shall present the second fascinating story in tonight's program. In the meantime, we step aside to hear from your announcer. Back now to our narrator and cast for the second unusual but true story in our program, A Matter of Luck.
Samuel Finley Morse and A Matter of Luck. Luck was the dominant factor in the second career of Samuel Finley Morse. In 1832, he had already earned a name for himself as an artist of more than ordinary talents when he embarked from Le Havre on the sailing packet Sully for New York and his American home. He was nearly 40 years old, and after losing his beloved wife, was returning from 3 years' study and travel in Italy and France. There would be several weeks with nothing to see all day but the sea and the sky, and nothing to hear but the wind in the rigging and the monotonous sound of the ship's bell. So the passengers were glad to have on board with them such a famous and charming man as Morse and the young Dr. Jackson from Boston. Dr. Jackson was not only excellent company, but he was also a skilled amateur conjurer and physicist, so that everyone crowded into the saloon that first night out to watch him perform his magic.
You have all been very kind to bear with my little tricks, ladies and gentlemen. So I've kept my best one to last. Now, please, everyone, observe my silk hat. It is empty. You're all agreed. Then to prove it, I close it up. Now, the latest fashion from the Faubourg Saint-Germain, ladies and gentlemen, the collapsible top hat. Well, there's nothing in it, is there? Right. I place it under the cloth, and I permit it to expand. So, now, closely, abracadabra, may I present you to the ship's cat. Now, thank you. Now, if I may have your attention for just one more moment, here is something altogether different.
Samuel Morse didn't dream that the moment when Dr. Jackson was setting up his apparatus for a new piece of magic was to alter the course of his whole future life, that from that moment his life was to pursue an unimagined course filled with new ideas, hopes, and struggles. But that was to be the luck of it.
It is a scientific experiment that I venture to say will astonish you, known as the electromagnet. Now, some years ago, it was discovered that if a piece of soft iron is wound about with a coil of wire connected to a battery, it is magnetized just so long as the current from the battery is switched on. Now, observe closely. Here is the magnet. Now, I switch on the current and bring the magnet close to this heap of nails here. You see? The magnet picks up every one and holds them aloft. But watch. The current is switched off. And the nails all fall headlong to the table. A marvelous phenomenon, ladies and gentlemen. The controlled electromagnet.
As Jackson's magnet picked up a handful of nails and dropped them again, in obedience to his touch on the switch, Moss had a great idea. He knew something of electricity and could scarcely wait to compare notes with Jackson on deck the following day.
Good morning, my dear Morse. Not seasick, I'm glad to see.
No, indeed. I'm lucky enough to be a good sailor. That's more than you can say for some of our fellow passengers.
I always say it's a matter of one's approach to sea travel. Some people I know get sick the moment they book their passage.
The cynical physician, huh?
Me? Cynical? Far from it. How'd you like my little performance last night?
I was delighted. And that's what I want to talk to you about. Do you know, Jackson, for 20 years I've had an ambition simmering in the back of my mind.
Yeah, I know. You want to paint the King of England or someone.
Oh, no, nothing of the kind. I want to discover a means of rapid communication. And last night you showed me the way.
I showed you the way with a few poor conjuring tricks?
No, with your electromagnet.
My dear fellow, I'm afraid I don't know what you're talking about.
You will in a minute. Now listen. Last night you switched on your current, and the magnet picked up some nails.
Yes, but I don't see how that's going to help
you. Wait a minute. Just suppose you'd been in the next cabin with your switch, or down at the other end of the ship. You could still have picked up the nails in the saloon and dropped them again if the wire had been long enough.
Now I begin to see what you mean.
You see? Given a strong current and enough wire, you can transmit signals by switching on and off in some prearranged manner. A magnet will do many things besides pick up nails.
Yeah, it's a brilliant idea, Morse. A brilliant idea, but I can't for the life of me see you ever making anything of it.
Well, there are difficulties, I admit. But they can be overcome.
Oh, no, Morse. The conception is good. A tribute, in fact, to your artistic imagination. But I don't think the magnet will ever be anything but a scientific toy. Just a toy of no practical use at all.
To the disappointment of the women passengers, the handsome Mr. Morse spent the remainder of the voyage in his cabin, appearing only for meals and not always then. He was working away at plans for his communication device. And by the time Sully tied up at New York, he had its first principles worked out. An hour later, he was home, discussing his trip with his younger brother, Richard.
So that's the story, Dick. There's a fellow named Stevenson in England who has a steam engine that has done 35 miles an hour. There are factories springing up everywhere. The whole tempo of life is quickening, Dick. And only communications have remained unchanged this last 1,000 years. Why, African blacks are ahead of us with their tom-toms. I'm going to change all that. And I have the first plans right here in this notebook. I'm done with painting. From now on, I'm an experimenter.
But darn it all, Samuel, how are you going to live? What are you going to use for money?
Oh, I'll get along somehow. But if it takes me 20 years, I'll find an answer to the problem of communicating over long distances instantaneously.
Moss spent the next 2 years wrestling with his first model apparatus. It worked well enough up to a point. He could make his magnet move a small iron bar from other rooms of his house. But what was the use of that? How was he to transmit messages? His painting connection had long since dwindled to nothing, and he was earning no money, so he had to sell household furniture to keep himself fed. Then his brother decided that this ridiculous obsession had gone on long enough.
Now look here, Sam, this can't go on. When the house is stripped bare, what then?
But don't you see, Dick, I'm so close to success right now. I have my switch and battery in one room. That could quite well be Boston, and my magnet and bar are in here. Say this is New York. I press my switch in there, and the bar moves on its hinge in here.
But in the name of heaven, what's the use of that?
Well, all I have to do is figure out a way of turning the bar movements into an intelligible message. Look, I've worked out a code that's pretty good.
Ah, no. You're wasting your life. And a good deal of my money. Even though I don't begrudge it. You can't keep on selling things all the time. Why, you'll sell that old clock of Granddad's next.
That lot of use it is. Confounded thing hasn't gone for years. Never did like grandfather clocks anyway.
Well, how can you expect it to go? Look here.
Oh, what is it?
Come and see for yourself.
Well, what do you know about that? I never thought to look down at the bottom inside it. I always tried the works.
Fine scientist you are. Now, who could have put all that old paper down there? Oh, you can see what's wrong. The pendulum is scraped back and forth across the top sheet, like you can see by the marks. Then one day it stuck and wouldn't swing anymore.
Oh, well, may as well clean it out and set it going, I suppose. Here,
lend a hand.
Oh, now I'm all covered in dust. Oh, what a mess.
Well, now, see if it goes. Hand over the key, will you?
Well, there it is, good as new. Well, I'll have to run along. Now, whatever you do, don't stuff all that paper back into it, or I'll have to fix it for you again. That top sheet is rather interesting, though.
Oh, how's that?
Well, if you cared to, you could count how many times the pendulum swung across the paper before it stuck, just by counting the marks, see? Each one's a little different.
Yes, that's so. Each time it scraped across, it made a little mark. Well, if you're going now, when will I see you again?
Next week sometime, I guess. Good luck with your work, and don't sell that clock!
The clock? The pendulum and marks on that piece of paper? Why, that's it! There it is! The telegraph! Dots and dashes over the telegraph!
And so Samuel Morse built his first practical telegraph at last by mounting a pencil on his magnet-controlled bar and suspending it over a strip of paper moved slowly by clockwork. When he touched the key of his telegraph, the pencil moved onto the paper. A short touch meant a dot, a long one a dash. And the telegraph was from that day an accomplished fact. In January 1838, Samuel Morse's telegraph was accepted by the United States Congress. And though much more work on it had still to be done, its original conception was the result of a conjurer's entertainment and its first practical working due to an old grandfather clock that wouldn't go. Yes, we'll allow you that once Samuel Morse had been inspired by the conjurer, the invention of the telegraph was a matter of intent. But you will agree that the fact that finally it did work was just a matter of luck.
Two authentic stories of the discovery of the steam condenser and the telegraph were dramatized by Lindsay Hardy from Factual Research Material and were directed by Donovan Joyce. The performers included Kevin Brennan, Lyndall Barber, Athol Fleming, Alan Trevor, Kevin Gunn, Leonard Teal, Grant Taylor, and Alan Light. Your narrator was Ward Leopold, who invites you to listen again 1 week from now, same night, time, and station, for a further fascinating half hour of A Matter of Luck, a Donovan Joyce production.